Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
What's good, internet? It's Monday, September 14th, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 345. I'm your host, Austin Walker. Joining me today, Gita Jackson.
Hello, I'm Gita.
Ricardo Contreras.
Yo.
And Patrick Klepek.
Less happy as a Bears fan, more sad for Lions fans, honestly.
Wow, really?
You
weren't happy? Come on, in the moment.
No, I was, but I'm saying, I had made my peace with the loss. I was like, cool, let's put in Nick Foles, get Big Dig Nick in there, and let's turn this season around. And the way the running back dropped that. They should have won that game. We didn't earn it. I'll take it, though. Hey, a win's a win.
As an Eagles fan, I feel like I'm home. Finally, the Eagles again immediately
lost to the racist football team.
to football team, yeah, to racist football team. It's so
there are multiple
funny
racist
to see
football
it.
Teams. I guess I should be like more specific, but the one that was so
one
racist
doesn't currently have a name.
Right,
I love the name
Eagles
I would
versus football team. Is the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life.
If they just
imagine
end up
being
Washington
so
football
racist
team forever.
That you're like, I'm not going to spend my money to make it so that my brand has a brand. Like, that's how racist I am. I'm not going to move quick on this thing.
Listen,
fuck it. We're football
buddy,
team now.
Blackhawks still exist, so there's a lot of work that's got to be done.
The sports is
Chicago
a land of contrast.
You
got to
work up the racism hierarchy, right? So it's like, you, like, the
slur.
Washington football team is, slur. Like, all right, let's table that. Then we can start thinking about the Chiefs and the Blackhawks.
Right, then stereotypes.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, exactly.
So
somewhere in there.
The outright slurs first.
Cleveland Indians, I feel like, are next on the docket.
Yes.
I feel like that's maybe
absolutely
where we're moving up next.
Yes.
Because the Blackhawks and Chiefs are going to be like, we're respecting a place in the, I see what they're going to say.
You can see the rhetoric.
The hollow PR statement. But like the Chief can so clearly just immediately be turned into like a 70s cop. Bad in a different
Chief,
way.
Chief, right?
But, but like still something that like people will get and like and want to wear t-shirts of, you know?
Right.
They'll dress up as the Chief, right? You know, like it'll totally, the switch over
like,
will be
like
totally
out of
perfect.
The fucking Beastie Boys Sabotage video, era of big mustache, giant aviators.
Yes.
You know?
And like they'll get a secondary audience of gay men.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I might be down. That might be the play.
Honestly, I think that is the move. I think
it's
the only way you can recover it. Because
you know,
cops are also
12,
awful.
But
might as well have a cartoon cop, basically. You
if
know?
You're going to have a cop, have a cartoon cop. God. I was like, speaking of cartoon cops, but I can't throw to anything because I looked at the list of things we're talking about today. None of these are cops, really. Should we just talk about, Patrick, should we just talk about Spelunky 2?
Sure, we can talk about Spelunky 2.
Let's talk about Spelunky 2. I want to talk about Spelunky 2. Spelunky 2 is out soon, tomorrow?
Yes, it'll be out on Tuesday, PlayStation 4, and then on the PC in a couple of weeks, like 2 or 3 weeks. It's not a long, although ironically, the like 7 hours I've played has all been on the PC and not 100%. The PS4 version. It came in like extremely hot. Like I got an email on Friday evening, like 7 p.m. with a code. That was like, hey, here's your copy of Spelunky 2. Also, the embargo is 5 a.m. on Monday morning, which is why the PC version was ceded to a number of folks. But also, then like 5 minutes after that email came in, it was like, oh, you got to wait for an update. This game is fucking broken. So please don't play it on the PlayStation 4. So I feel terrible for any folks that were like tasked with trying to like rush through Spelunky 2 over a weekend to try and get thoughts together. For the embargo on Monday. Yeah, I don't have a review because reviews are impossible for me in COVID. But it also, I've made my thoughts on Spelunky 2 pretty clear in like the 2 years since it was announced, year and a half since it was announced, and that I think there are it's so many times if you like to rewind the clock on this podcast or any podcast, people that this is a great foundation for a sequel. It's mm-hmm. just like a lot of cool things are happening here. Can't wait to see what they do with it next. Like that is just that's intrinsic to a lot of video game design and how games are made. And so there's reason sequels are often like really great executions of a base idea. Whereas Spelunky, in some ways, Spelunky is a sequel.
Right. That's the thing to remember, right?
It was, yeah. it was, there was a freeware game that Derek Yu, the designer of Spelunky, had released that had a lot of the basic ideas that would go on to inform the Xbox 360 remake, essentially, or reimagining. And like, it's almost a sequel. Like, it's really taking that freeware game and like, it's not just polishing and getting it newest, you know, fancy graphics. It really is kind of taking that over the finish line. And when I finished Spelunky, you know, I beat Hell. And I think I wasn't ready to give up the ghost on that game. Well, I'm always ready to give up the ghost on, and boy, the ghost in Spelunky 2. We'll get there. I like did Speedlunky once on like the Vita version, like say on the couch where you beat Olmec in under 7 minutes or something
it's super
like that.
Fast. Yeah.
And I was able to do that and I was like, what am I doing? Like I'm good. Like I tried to
you
do a couple,
you,
I tried
you,
to do a couple of times the, you try and beat Olmec with, under a certain gold count. And the reason that is hard is because when you go through the jungle, the gold is hidden underneath often the sprites. So you have
right.
to whip your way through the environment to like move the gold out of the way.
Right.
And I gave up there. But it was I finished that game and was like, this is a perfect game. I didn't finish it and go, boy, I'd love to see where they went from here. I mostly thought to my head, boy, I'd love to see what Derek Yu does from here. And so my feeling on Spelunky 2 all along has been, what drew him back? What is so interesting to revisit something that on the surface looks awfully similar, but just with more of it and different ideas riffing on the same concept, but is in no way did not appear to be like a revolution of the Spelunky concept. And the long and short of Spelunky 2 is like, it is not that. This is a sequel to Spelunky that takes a lot of those core concepts, mixes them up in some interesting ways, but at the end of the day, like is more Spelunky. Now I say that with 7 hours and not knowing all the secrets and where everything goes in the game, but that is my like initial like sub 10-hour impression of it, and I still like it.
How far in have you gotten, so to speak?
So fortunately, I'm all right. So let's a caveat: if you are a Spelunky purist, we are. A lot of spoilers, a lot of Spelunky is discovery. And so
yes.
It's impossible to talk about Spelunky 2 without spoiling what we've discovered so far. So if you're going in pure, you know, your takeaway should be, if you like Spelunky, I think you're going to like Spelunky 2.
Yes.
It's, you know, so you're good. And you probably didn't need to hear this.
Skip ahead to whatever Kato is putting in the timestamp is for the next thing.
Yeah. Because I just want to be able to talk about everything I've experienced up to this point freely without having to caveat it. So last night was really important. I finally decided to take advantage of
the Bears won.
Huh?
I said the Bears won.
The Bears won.
It was really important.
That was the important part.
Yeah.
Finally took advantage of a shortcut so that I could the first world, Austin, how much have you played?
6 hours. So just
okay,
under
so
you.
We're roughly the same investment.
Yeah.
I have found the first world to be a lot more difficult than
it's so much harder than the original.
So
jungle.
Much harder.
Yeah.
So much harder.
Or we entropy has claimed our Spelunky skills.
I don't think so. There's a couple of key things that I've picked up on early on in Spelunky 2, which is that, one, ABC, always be carrying. And that was true in Spelunky, and it is so much truer in Spelunky 2. The idea behind ABC, always be carrying, is that you should always have an item that you can do something with.
Right.
And you need an item, and your whip is only can affect the area in front of you. It can't be used to...
Sometimes you're at the edge of a cliff and you can see that there is an arrow trap just below you and you need to trigger the arrow trap with something that isn't your precious body.
Right, and this can be, what you learn in Spelunky is that there are so many objects that can be carried, right? Like an arrow that shoots out from... one of those objects, when that arrow breaks, you can pick up the broken arrow. That will still trigger it. Picking up a dog, picking up, you know, just have a rock. And this, one of the things that you get really used to in Spelunky 1 is the different, vases will often contain money. And so you're always breaking those. And occasionally, rarely, very rarely, is there an enemy inside there. But it happens in a sort of like, haha, this one in a 100 runs, like, there was an enemy in here.
There's a fucking spider in this vase. Yeah, and I broke it right. I was on it. Yeah.
They are everywhere. Yes. Like, you should just assume there is an enemy in there. So the ABC is like, it's underlined now. It's like ABC underlined. Like, do not forget this, because you need to be carrying that spider or that snake that's in there. The other thing that's notable about the first area that makes it more difficult is there are just way more instances where you can get yourself stuck. Yeah. It often felt like in the first Spelunky that they would – it was pretty difficult to, like, find yourself, like, trapped in a corner where there's, like, no way for you to finagle your way out. In Spelunky 2, you can just kind of go off to the left down, like, an area that has just has, like, one piece of gold, and then you suddenly realize – ah, shit, I need to use a bomb or I need to use a rope. Like, I am just one square shy.
Yeah, to get out of this place. Yeah.
And so the game is constantly, like, putting you in positions where you're going to use your resources faster, and it is constantly putting you in positions where enemies are going to push, like, this lizard enemy type that is all over the place. Yeah. There are two main enemy types that are, like, annoying. In the first area is this lizard that when you approach it, rolls into a ball and shoots forward. And it's just the time between being static and in a ball and shooting at you is so fast. And so that is constantly pushing you around. And then
go ahead.
I'll just finish this and I'll let you go.
Yeah.
Is the I don't know what you would call it, like this burrower enemy. Like, what would
it's like a mole. It's an evil fucking mole.
Well, the mole is the one you're going to be cursing right off the bat. And the mole is kind of doing its own thing. It can go through the environment, up, down, left, right. It can exit any square. And it if you get close, you can then sort of like bait it out. But what's more likely what's going to happen for you in the opening hours is you're just going to not visually recognize it's there, or you like notice it and then forget. And then when this mole comes out, it's extremely fast. Mm-hmm. And that mole is going to get you to jump or move or do something you didn't mean to do, which then sets off the whole chain of events that occurs in Spelunky of throwing into different enemies and yada, yada, yada. And it's so I have just found the opening. I've spent most of my 7 hours in that opening area because I have found the hump of like just internalizing everything that's going on there. To granted, this is, you know, I put 100 hours of original Spelunky. And so maybe some of it's coming to grips with old habits and letting those like die hard. But in my heart of hearts, I do think that this first area is meant to be more punishing and has more going on to prepare you. I found the second area, specifically the jungle, to be like less stressful when I've gotten there. And maybe that's just because the first area is as tough as it is. So anyway, I'll stop rambling.
The two things. One, I wanted to note that lizard that does the sonic spin dash at you will kill you if you're in a corner. It will just like, oh, it hit you once. Well, guess what? It's going to like air juggle you extremely like Pringles Haagen-Dazs. You're done. Like, it pops you up and then it just will not stop slamming you against the wall. Great. Well, great enemy design.
Or you're going to go against one of the kind of like totems or whatever.
The punching traps.
They have punching bags, basically. Yeah. Like, there's these like columns that just have punching bags. And the amount of times I have like accidentally like gone for a tiny piece of gold where like they put up the punching column against, there's only one square to work with. And if you get hit once against a wall, like, you're just done. It's just going to slowly punch you over the next 10 seconds and you're just going to be dead.
I hit one yesterday that was like, they were equidistant apart and I misjudged how apart they were. I thought that they were apart where there was one tile in between where their punching fists would hit and there was a gem or something right in the middle. And I was like, I can get that and get out. No, they literally jumped in and both of the trapped arms came out and slammed me from both sides. It was great. I'll say that first area is – even that first area has a lot of the new systemic interaction stuff that I hoped I would find here. So, for instance, the turkeys – there's turkeys in this game.
Yes.
Big turkeys that you could.
There's a man who loves his turkeys.
The man loves these turkeys. The turkeys are like Yoshi. The turkeys need to be tamed. You get a little mm-hmm. turkey, it starts running around wildly in every direction, falling off of higher levels into lower levels. It will kill you. It will run you into enemies or into a spike pit.
A lot of times it makes sense to whip it, unfortunately, yes. to hurt it. It can take two hits, so then you can like drag it into like a corner where it'll just go do 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 do.
Right,
and
while you're
the
riding
little
it.
Hearts that appear when he's like, I love you now. My rider.
And then it's like a Yoshi in that it has like a limited near range attack, like the tongue whip from Yoshi.
The area of effect is different than the whip.
It is,
and so the whip hits you when the whip is sort of like at like eye level of the sprite. And so, because so much of Spelunky is internalizing, like, what do they call it? Like, not frame.
Hitboxes?
Hitboxes.
Yeah, hitboxes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. A lot of the hours you're spending are, like, internalizing hitboxes and, like, what your space is to play with. And the hitbox is different with the turkey because the turkey lowers its neck and hits from below. And so, I believe, like, there are some enemies where if you just, like, try and hit it forward, like you're gonna miss it. And so like it ends up like changing the dynamic of even just
up for sure.
Yes, how you approach basic enemies, where like maybe it's better to get off that turkey with that bat.
So things you can do with that turkey. You can Yoshi jump off of it where you jump with the turkey and then jump off the turkey for extra height.
Damn.
You can turn the turkey into the guy who loves turkeys. He'll give you a key to like a place
turkeys.
Yeah, you turn in two. You had to find two and bring them in. You can sacrifice them on an altar, just like in Spelunky 1.
I remember
HD.
You need like a lot of sacrifices to. I haven't done it enough for it to trigger.
Oh, I do. I still sacrifice a lot. Most of the time, it's just like you'll end up getting a climbing glove or some other decent item that's useful. But you need like basically it's like three turkeys and a caveman coming this fall on ABC.
Did enemies have random drops in Spelunky 1?
No, I don't think so.
Because
they would start with stuff sometimes, I think. We're like, oh, that caveman has a gun. That caveman has a gun.
Oh, dude, one of the cutest little details in Spelunky 2 is I don't think this is the case in Spelunky 1. Like the cavemen will just pick up random items in the environment that are in front of them and just walk around with them.
Holding
like a tiny piece of gold and just walking back and forth with the biggest smile. I won't take it from them. I'm like, well, you are having a great time. I do not need to be the aggressor here.
Yeah. But so there's a new item. Have you used the power pack at all? The power pack is a very expensive item in the shop.
It turns your whip into a fire whip.
It does more than that because it powers up your weapons is what it says. I forget what the third one was. There's another one that was like maybe with a shotgun or with another gun. It made my fire speed better or something. The other one is it makes your bombs big. It makes your bombs really big, which is very useful. But the fire whip, if you use the fire whip on the turkey, it cooks the turkey.
And you get like +4 health, right?
Yes.
Because like, there's these like
– yes. And that's huge.
The first time so, like, I encountered the – oh, go ahead.
I was just saying that's like one of those things where it's like, all right, I have a turkey. I can now bring this turkey to the next level in case there's a power pack in it. And I can save up for the power pack or I can try to kill the shopkeeper and then steal the power pack and then kill the turkey to make it into a healing item. And like that's the stuff that I love about Spelunky. Thinking about those possibilities as ways to dig myself out of a problem, the kind of macro scale run problem where it's like I got hit too many times in the first level. Oh, shit. OK, if I get the turkey, if I get the power pack, I can dig myself out of this bad health hole that I've gotten myself into.
Yeah. And so I don't, I'm dying a lot. I'm really liking
it. But last night you started by saying that you hit an important
milestone.
Yeah. So
I finally, like the for the structure of Spelunky for folks who are, unfamiliar, I don't know what you're doing listening to Waypoint, unfamiliar with Spelunky, but hey, live your life. You knew what you were getting into, at least the original game. I'm unclear on the structure of the sequel. Other than it being, I think much longer and more dynamic in terms of like you can get to the end of 1-4 and you can go down two different paths. Right. So you can choose which world you want to go to next as opposed to Spelunky 1, which was caves, jungle, I guess the first era called caves, like whatever that first
caves,
era
yeah,
was.
I said jungle before. I meant caves. Caves is
yeah, caves
is right.
Jungle, ice caves, and then whatever the fourth one was. And then you get to Olmec, and then there's a secret area, hell, if you do a bunch of things along the way. And so as you finish areas,
tombs.
You can pay.
Tombs was the last one, right?
Tombs, yes. Yeah, that held the Egyptian sort of aesthetic.
I think that's right.
So as you made it through each area, you can pay like some bombs and some gold for a shortcut to be opened up. And so those shortcuts are not really useful if you're doing a pure run where you're like, I want to try and beat the game, because you're going to need all the gold, all the upgrades that come along with doing the full run. But when you're trying to learn enemy types and the new systems of an area, the shortcuts are very useful because it's no pressure. It's not, oh man, I got here with the shotgun and 30,000 gold and plus 6 health, and then you get to the jungle and you step on one of those hidden vine spikes that kills you in one hit because you weren't looking closely enough at the ground, and then you're just distraught. So last night it was fun to just get in there and just futz around in the jungle. It's low stakes, and I can just kind of feel out the area and the enemies and how they're acting. Mm-hmm. And I made it as far as, so if you get through 2-4, and this gets into the jungle. I didn't mess with the other half of the other world two, which is kind of like a mechanical, robots and chains.
I've also been doing the jungle because I would like.
I'm also familiar with the jungle.
That's exactly
like,
it.
Like
I would
I just
like
felt
to
more
beat
familiar.
An area. Yes.
And I made it to Olmec. Like the end of two, World Two introduces, which is
I did
course,
not get
like
the end of World Two.
You get to end of World Two, and Olmec shows up, but there's no like fancy music. It's just like here's Olmec, and I'm like, this is
that's telling
game. Like this doesn't seem very like you're telling me this is an important moment. And what happened to me was at this point, I've getting Olmec down like his left to right. You're baiting him to get him to destroy the stat, like the ground beneath him. I had that, and then he gets to a second level, and in the second, this was great. I made it to the second level, and it was clear, like, oh, there's a second Olmec form. Like, what's going to happen here? And I had one health, and I was just there to kind of explore Olmec's design. And instead of picking up a vase, I whipped it, and there was a snake inside, and it killed me. And so,
Perfect.
One of the beauties of Spelunky is that the game system keeps running when you're dead, and so enemies will kind of keep running around, and like the systems that are like activated right with near you will keep going. And all I could see was that Olmec had boosted up, was throwing bombs, and had hover things below him. It seemed to have turned into a robot. And I was just like, oh,
miserable.
Okay.
Perfect.
So my guess is that Spelunky 2 is still like 1, 2, 3, 4 and then over. And like, the thing that's different is there are mini bosses in this game. Well, like when you get to the end of 1-4, there is sort of a mini boss that you can either engage with or just go past. One of the big lessons the first 7 hours was Patrick, stop trying to engage with him.
You're not going to win this fight. Just use him to get through
the
rest of the level.
If you have the freeze ray, it's a one hit kill. And so I got the freeze ray really.
Does he drop anything?
He drops a lot of money and he drops a turkey. And. Okay. I did that. Like,
you got
I had
a turkey
really
in him?
Early,
you got a big turkey in his belly?
He's a big boy. You know, he got those big spikes. You know, maybe he had cooked a turkey just before you showed up. So that turkey was just in his belly.
Fresh turkey. Yeah.
But I had a bunch of runs that involved the freeze gun, and I started using that as a crutch because it was like, oh, this is just going to become my build because I keep getting this freeze gun, which was only 10,000, which wasn't too hard to have after the first or second area.
Right.
And so I took him out really quick, and I was like, oh, so maybe this is what you're supposed to do. So I just kept trying to kill him for hours on these runs, and I finally just stopped doing this. Just like bait him once to open up a side and then
get out of there.
Head down there.
Yes,
and
that's the play.
That's what I started doing, and then having more success. Have you gotten any of the other weird mounts?
The axolotl I got, which is like
that the one that teleports?
No. What? This is the one that shoots bubbles. The axolotl. An axolotl is like a it's like an amphibian. It has like a big round face and big weird fringes.
I think
coming
you got the one that teleports, and you didn't trigger the teleport.
How do you teleport? Did yours have the bubble? Did yours spit the bubble out?
Yes. So it has.
Shit.
So if you, I want to say this is the correct mount. So in this Spelunky, occasionally in one of the shops. Now they're like different. Did the first game have different shops, or was it
not
always
to the degree this
shop
does? This has a lot of this is Yes.
So anyway, there's like, you get like a clothing shop, and then there'll be like a weapon shop. And so in one of the shops, occasionally you'll get, you can buy mounts. So it's like kind of like the turkey, but they're just, they have different characteristics. One was like this, like Cerberus, like it was a fire dog, cool. and could shoot out like a flaming, which of course I just immediately, I tried to fight the 1-4 mini boss and just immediately ate shit and was like, oh, I liked having that dog for more than one area. I want to say this was the same mount. I could be incorrect, but I believe it does a double jump, which all of them do, I think.
Right.
And then if you click it again, it has the innate characteristics of a teleporter item. The teleporter item in Spelunky sends you like, I don't know, 4 or 5 spaces.
You really got to know how many.
I think it can go up, down, left, right. I think it might be whatever you're holding on the analog stick. I could be incorrect on that because I almost never used the teleporter. Yeah, it's a high skill death trap. It is really meant for people who are speedrunning the game or... I don't know. You've had a run that's gone bad and you just want to see what might happen. The teleporter is just like, I will say I have found that item has dropped in the shops a lot. Where I almost feel like the game is being like, hey, have you thought about
becoming one of those teleport players?
I was like, no, I have not. I didn't in the first game and I don't think that's going to change in Spelunky 2.
You ever thought about being inside of a wall and dying instantly, despite having a good run up until this point?
Well, huh? I was encouraged the way I died was not from going into a wall.
So if I had known that, I was on that axolotl, and I don't know if it would have helped because of where I was, but a ghost got me. I was stuck between a wall and the ghost coming at me. And if I knew I could teleport, I probably could have teleported to the other side of the ghost. Instead, I shot a bubble at it. It didn't do anything, but it did bubble an enemy behind. You shoot like these, like, you know, big air bubbles, you know, or like water bubbles that then go around an enemy. And I think they lifted the enemy up, maybe. I died so quickly, it was hard for me to make sense of what I was watching happen. Also, the ghosts have a trick in which I don't even want to. Let's not spoil the ghost trick. Let's let people find the pot. What's the pot? Oh, no, not that I'll talk about. But the thing that happens to the ghost if you just try to avoid the ghost for a long time now.
Oh, I haven't done that.
Oh, played that game. Okay.
Because once the ghost shows up, I'm like, cool. All right, like I'm out of here.
I was like, the ghost. I know what to do with the ghost.
I'm gonna kite him around the level.
Right. So in the first, in Spelunky HD, you could, when at the end of a few minutes, a ghost would show up. That would slowly follow you around the level, and if it ever touched you, you would die instantly. It was a way.
If the ghost goes over,
this is it.
Gold,
yes, like, or gems, so like,
or gem. One of the strategies would be like clean up an area, have a path, and then
get a bunch of gold together, get a bunch of money together.
So when it goes, when it goes over, it increases your
the ghost would magically change money into better money, like ghosts do.
Man, that's capitalism, right?
That's capitalism. Use ghosts to make wealth for yourself.
Take money to make it into more money.
All right, and the value from that ghost. Let me tell you, there's a counter built into the ghost now for that strategy. Ooh. That will fuck you up. Mm. It's very
now I gotta
funny.
Find out.
But that's the stuff that makes it work for me so well is like this is a game that's in conversation with people who like the first Spelunky, which I think is like my big takeaway here. It's a remix of Spelunky, but it's also you have that feeling of in Friends at the Table, I had a character, I had a player in the first season who's playing a wizard. And every time the wizard got in trouble, he turned himself invisible and made the rest of the party deal with the problem because he was a craven coward who refused to engage with problems. And so eventually, early on, I was like, I know what I'm going to do. The next time he goes invisible, if he does it on like a mixed success where I get to like put a little spin on it, I'm going to say he gets stuck being invisible. And he'll have to fucking deal with being invisible for the rest of this adventure or figure out a way to undo it and understand that there's risks that come with reusing magic in this way. And that's what Spelunky 2 feels like. Spelunky 2 feels like the GM of the game Spelunky being like, uh-huh, yeah, oh, you thought you were fucking slick? Uh-huh. All right, son, deal with this. And I love that feeling so much. I love feeling like your expectations are being played with, your knowledge is being rewarded, but also leading you into new surprises. And so I'm like you, I'm like, yeah, this is go play this. This is good. This is more Spelunky, but it's also just great.
If you get caught up in like you know, I've already seen some of the reviews, and the reviews are, like, unsurprisingly, like, extremely positive.
Because they're written by people who love Spelunky.
Right, which is, so I almost want to say, and this is, you know, said with, you know, me having played, you know, an eighth of probably what I'll end up playing of this game. I don't know, if you're new to Spelunky, I don't know that I would recommend Spelunky playing HD. Spelunky 2.
Yeah. If it is a conversation, you need to have already been in that conversation.
And also, I do fundamentally think this is a harder, more complex game that is like you said, in conversation with the first and your skill set of the first and then your knowledge and tactics of the first, that I don't look at this as a traditional like sequel where it's like, just read what happened in the story and like you're getting the better mechanics. Like not a lot has like, this isn't like a better mechanics game. Like, in some ways I need to go play like an hour of the first one just to like refresh my memory on like what was like, did you run automatically in the first one?
I don't know. I also didn't know this because I immediately turned that shit off in Spelunky 2.
Spelunky 1, you walked by default and you ran holding a button.
Or was that just common? Was that just what you did? You went in and changed that setting
because
everyone you knew told you to do that? I don't remember.
I can't remember, but I do know. I found myself in Spelunky 2 holding the walk. There's a
just switch it. It's in the options. Go in and switch it.
Well, I don't know that I'm going to because ultimately, at a certain level of you playing Spelunky, you should just be running the time anyway.
Yeah.
And so
maybe that's why it's like that as default, is because it's like, listen, high level play of this, you're going to be running all the time. You shouldn't be walking.
Because really the play is more like, okay, the reason you keep getting hit by that bat is because you're messing up the hitbox because you're running up to it.
Right.
And what you should do is you should hold the walk button. And so I almost feel like the game is acknowledging like what people were just doing in the first one, which is just holding the run button.
But I like holding the run button. I like holding down that trigger.
I think that's fair. I think that's interesting as like the game just like, that's a small thing, but it's a big acknowledgement of player behavior, which again just goes to show your point of this being a conversation with the audience and the culture that came around Spelunky.
Which is, I will say, the other thing that I'm missing, which I won't have to miss for much longer, is what's my favorite part of Spelunky? Oh, is it the great design? Is it the fun characters? Is it the you know, interesting death? Like, yeah, all that's great. But like, what I loved about Spelunky was watching people play Spelunky every day. Watching you and Chris Remo die every day for
watching me play. My favorite part about that arc was me playing against Chris Remo in the daily challenge.
Yeah,
but he didn't know that we were competing. It was an invisible tournament between me and him.
Yeah.
And so eventually he became part of it. And someone made like a Twitter bot that was like,
that was
like
friend of
Remo
the
versus
friend
Patrick.
I think that was friend of the site, Joel. Voodoo person. I think that that's who made that bot. Maybe I'm wrong.
That wouldn't shock me if that was the case. But it started as me just being like in my streams being like, ha ha, fucking gotcha, Chris. And then that's just me. That's just because Chris was the only one on my list playing every day that I'm going to throw someone, you know, people like Will Smith were playing and it just wasn't really competitive on a day-to-day basis. And Chris Remo was like, he was at my level and it's like, we would kind of go back and forth, but it was just between me and him. It's so when he finally so became funny. Aware of it, it was kind of like, it was so fun to root for myself and boo you and not have you know, except for the people in my mentions who'd be like, hey, he beat you today. And then Chris would just be like, beat me in what? Like, what are we even talking about? Which is why...
Glad you guys brought this up, because my entire experience with Spelunky is watching Patrick Klepek play Spelunky.
Yeah.
I knew by watching you that this was not going to be like my type of game, but not only is it so fun to watch people be extremely good at a video game, which you are very good at this video game, it's fun to discover secrets about the game alongside the players. And I'm most excited about that for Spelunky 2. Like watching players discover new things and then feeling like I'm a part of the secret because I get to see that happen in real time.
Yes.
Which is why I couldn't, like when I'm like picking my dates over the year, it's like, oh, this is a game that maybe I have to review because like for traffic reasons. And Spelunky is like, this game is not a traffic game, like for its review or impressions. Like any good like traffic pieces I get out of it will be like me finding things in the community and stories of people doing. And so... Mm-hmm. I didn't feel that pull from like the commercial like aspect of running a website, but it was more like my whole identity with Spelunky is playing that with an audience. Like, I don't know that I would have played Spelunky for 100 hours if I was just like playing by myself.
Right.
Like what gave me the courage and ability to get over the frustrations of that game was like people in the audience being like, all right, do another run.
Yeah.
I don't know that I could have done that on my own. And so when I thought about Spelunky 2, it was like really difficult for me to imagine putting in a lot of hours into this by myself, because my whole like literal personal identity is talking over this game, watching people encourage me and scream at me and laugh at me when things went wrong or went right. And so like what I ended up doing with Spelunky 2, and maybe we can use this as a way to close out our conversation on it, was I remember telling Austin, I was like, it feels weird to start playing this game and not record myself. Like, that's just how I think about playing this game. But I also can't – I don't live in a world – both my kids are still, you know, at home vast majority of the time. I can't give up an hour where I tell my wife, like, I need you to watch both kids so that I can stream Spelunky for a minuscule amount of, like, Twitch cash. Like, that's just not, like, an exchange I can make this year. But I also didn't want to give up the – that identity I've had with it. So I started I loaded the game long enough to test like some of the audio levels, and then quit out of it, and then recorded myself playing at this point 7 hours of Spelunky into 7 episodes. It'll go up daily going forward, where you can kind of like watch me learn the game in real time, because that was my whole reason for playing the original, was like the pitch as like the feature for Giant Bomb was like, what would it be like to watch someone learn a game in real time, go from knowing nothing
right
to what they consider to like the height of their skill. And like, by the time I finished Hell, like that was the height of what, the fact that I could go do Spelunky and do like parts of like the gold achievement, like that, this is as high as the skill cap as I'm going to get for the investment I want to put in. And I don't live in a world where I'm going to be able to do that one-to-one for Spelunky 2, but at least for some majority of it, I'm going to try and replicate as much of that as I can for Spelunky 2, because that was that exactly like the what Gita is talking about, what she gets out of watching it. Like, I have that same, like, I can't imagine playing it from the flip side, where it's right. Like having the audience that's with me is the only way I want to play this game.
Right.
That's really beautiful. Honestly, I think that's so sweet. I love, I mean, part of, I think all three of us are really into sports. I'm like a little sports baby, but you guys have stronger relationships than I do. I root for whatever David is rooting for, which I can always hear through the door because he gets very excited about the games. I'm a Dodgers wife. I can't help it. Yeah, they won last night. That was great. That's great for us. It's something about experiencing something communally like that. It's replicated in very rare instances in our society, but I feel like when it's wholesome, not toxic, and really just about enjoying something for its merits and not putting anything else down, it's one of the most exhilarating feelings. Mm-hmm. I feel like hating the Astros is an experience that's not toxic, but I know that some other people might not feel that way. But like the fact that
2020 took a lot of things from us, and the thing, top 10,
yeah,
petty things it took from us, like really high on that top 10, is fucking 40,000 fans at every Astros game booing the fuck out of them. And that we're going to forget by the next baseball season. That's just, the enthusiasm's not going to be there. We're going to need another cheater. And the Astros deserve that so badly.
Apparently over the Dodgers game last night, or some game, I forget, but David retweeted this. It was just someone rented a plane that was trailing one of those signs that just said, "Steal this sign, Astros."
Very good. Perfect. Really quick, I want to correct myself. The person on Twitter who made the I just had the name of it. I think it was just it was Remo versus Klepek bot. Klepek versus Remo was.
I'm gonna at that
was
bot.
Yeah, good.
Dude, that person still has notifications turned on.
I hope so.
Reactivate.
Aaron Mariner made that. Who I confused with Joel Voodoo Person, because both are hashtag bot ally, obviously, from a more noble age of Twitter. Twitter when it didn't drive me up the fucking wall when people were making cool bots, and Joel made the Spelunky death Twitter bot that was able to pull from YouTube videos the moment of death and automatically post them to Twitter, where you just had a great stream of incredible deaths. I think that bot stopped working for some reason. at a certain point, but shout outs to 2013 Twitter when I don't know if it's I didn't have a lot of followers and so it was like a different experience, or if the world just wasn't the thing, or Twitter wasn't the thing it has become in the same way.
I think the two things can be true, right? I think those work in concert. Like your feed gets less playful and fun, yes, which is as you get more people. Yeah, and exactly. Then Twitter itself as a platform, as it's scaled to impact society, has not found, you know, like that was the joy of the death of the verified.
Yeah.
That was the closest I've had to the kind of fun that Twitter you used to have on early Twitter.
You're right.
Back when it was more of a playground.
Free us. All right, we should take a break and we come back and we talk about some more games.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Life on Venus, hello. Baby. We're going to Venus. I'm moving to Venus. Twitter's good on Venus.
Yeah. Venus.
Sounds good to me, honestly. Yeah. I want to see what kind of fucked up shit they're getting into over there.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah. I'm ready. I hear it's real hot there. That's fine.
Yeah. Take my planet. Please.
Venus, God.
All right.
Sorry, I forgot about
those old Destiny commercials.
Which ones?
The one where one guy yells Venus, baby. Oh, there was like that early, like one of the very first like Destiny 1 live action trailers did.
Right. Right.
With, like the three players, like one of the enduring lines from that turned into a meme was Venus, baby.
I see it. Yeah. Yeah. He's on like a speeder bike. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Great. God, those have names. What are those called? Sparrows. He's on a sparrow.
Sparrow, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of Destiny, Gita, you did a raid. That's my understanding, actually. We just lead in from that.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Great.
Kato helped me.
Uh-huh. You'll figure. It's when we start talking about Venus.
Yeah.
We come back on Venus.
Yeah. Kato reached out to me and some of my friends that I've been doing like a weekly Destiny just like hangout. Joshua Rivera, formerly of Kotaku, now of Everywhere, just being brilliant and amazing. He referred to Destiny 2 as a chat room game. Mm-hmm. So it's like a game that you use as a background activity while you're just really just talking with your friends. And me and my good friend Maddie Myers works for Polygon, and Nico Deo, who has freelance friends before and is freelance everywhere, she's also great. We have just every Thursday just getting on for like an hour, basically the time it takes for all of us to get too high to play. Mm-hmm. And like just doing strikes and shooting the shit and just catching up on our lives. It's really just been the activity that's kept me really sane throughout the dragging months of pandemic New York City. And one day Kato DM'd me and was like, would you guys like to do any of the raids that are going to be leaving in November? And I thought to myself, I've never done anything like this before. I want to know what it is like. And Kato is a very nice person. And the people he suggested to do this with were like our friend Jack, who's also on Friends of the
Jack
Table.
Jack DeKeet, yep.
Yeah, Jack DeKeet, who's
not quite real on Twitter, notquitereal.bandcamp.com for all of their music.
Yeah. A sheer delight to play with. And then Natalie, who I don't know, maybe you guys both know Natalie Watson.
Yeah, Natalie Watson, yeah.
Watson, right. Last names are real. and Kato. And was there someone else? No, it was just us.
That's the whole six. It was actually Jack reached out first. Jack reached out to me once the news came out that those raids were going away.
That makes sense.
And they were like, look, I've never done one and I heard that you like them. I'm like, yeah, I would love to. And so I like reached out to other people I know and we got this team together, which ended up
being Leviathan? Great. This was...
Yeah,
Leviathan.
Leviathan away? Really? Is that going in the vault?
Yeah.
That's a... Okay.
Yeah. They're putting away Leviathan and all of the other raid layers that went on Leviathan.
Yeah.
So that's
Yeah, that's why the darkness total, has come to all those planets, obviously. Like, duh. That's why they have little... Destiny lore, I went to a PowerPoint party this weekend, which is one of the funnest things you can do, honestly. When I did a PowerPoint about Destiny lore, and everybody was just absolutely amazed by what video games are, just what they are, and what the content they deliver to you, and what kinds of things you'll have to understand if you want to play a video game. But yeah, this was an experience unlike any other. I know like Nico and Natalie have both played MMOs for a long time, so they were more familiar with what a raid is and what this experience is going to be like than I am. But Nico is like original World of Warcraft person, so she was dealing with like raids that you have to organize like 20 to 40 people. So it was like a little different to coordinate just with the six of us. But even then, like the level of concentration, the level of attention to detail, and the level of just general execution that you have to do to get all these things right was not at once like the most frustrating thing I've ever done. And also like the most exhilarating thing to get right. Every time we got something absolutely correct, I just wanted to fly to the sun and punch it.
Yeah, that's absolutely the biggest thing that stuck with me about raiding, especially in Destiny, is that they have this balance of like the ways that you need to execute things are not so difficult that only the top like 0.1% of players that are like really good at the mechanics of the game can do it. It's more about getting six people to execute together, right? Like each individual job will be like difficult but not impossible. And it's really about the way you like set everyone up for success by having a good plan and, you know, executing as a team, which is really, really fun when you get it right.
Yeah.
It was like discovering what we're all capable of.
Yeah.
I mean, when I play with Nico and Maddie, we all just were like, well, we suck at this game, but it's great. We don't even have to pay attention to being good or not. But we all like killed it when we were doing the raid.
Absolutely. There's like, absolutely this great thing about Destiny where I feel like the way that they scale difficulty kind of like makes it easy to switch from those two modes, right? Like from like just fucking around in like open areas and like doing some of the lower level strikes to like getting into a raid where the mechanics don't change that much, but just enough to be like, oh, I'm awake now. Mm-hmm. Oh, I have to pay a little bit more attention as things are happening. And yeah, they just like really dial that stuff really, really well.
Yeah. It's, I kept trying to explain the experience of it to David, who doesn't play games in the same way that I do. Like, he's like a regular person who plays games that are available to play. Like, I mean, his favorite thing is like Dreams, honestly. He's obsessed with this game on Dreams called Super Ball World, where you just control a ball going down a track and you have to do really precise movements in order to get it to stay on the track.
Like a monkey ball type vibe?
Yeah, like a super monkey ball type vibe. It's a little bit different in that the camera, I think, is like chained to the ball. So you really can't see upcoming turns very well. And it's difficult to control also, but man, he loves that shit. And I look at it and I'm like, I'd rather shoot myself in the head with a nail gun. I'm so sorry. I don't think I could do that. But here it's just like, I tried to explain just like, you're doing like puzzles with your friends for like 8.5 hours. And it's somehow, it's so much time. I felt very guilty the whole time. Because I moved in with my partner like 2 months ago, and suddenly twice a week I'm spending 6 hours in a room with the door closed. Mm-hmm. And it's so much time, but I don't get that part of my brain scratched very often by very much other things in my life.
Right.
I think only like the Sherlock Holmes game, like tabletop game, that comes with like you read half a mystery story and they're like figure out the ending. That's the one of the few times in which I've felt this engrossed by an activity that I share with other people. Mm. And that is so remarkable.
Yeah.
I feel like we talk a lot. I mean, academics that study games talk a lot about like the nature of play and like how play is something that humans do naturally and the importance of play when it comes to learning new skills or being engaged. But I don't feel that a lot from video games, because for me, play also implies like a connectivity with other people. So here, yeah. I felt like I was accessing a part of my brain that just I haven't really touched since that preschool.
Is, yeah, that is not appreciated. It is also underappreciated, but just like doesn't get the attention that it deserves or needs in daily life in 2020.
Yeah. I mean, one, because it's harder to see other people. But two, like maybe the only other thing that compares to this is like organizing and being involved with protest and strategy and, the little limited experience I have working with the union or working with something like the DSA, being in those committee meetings and thinking about general strategy and then dividing up tasks and asking people to execute on their own. That is maybe the closest thing I think emotionally and like intellectually that compares to a raid. So if you're into raiding, maybe you should just start organizing.
That's what I think. Yeah. If you are already like to raid, get involved in local organizational politics. Speaking of politics, can I tell a story? Can I tell a Crusader King story that I think even Patrick, I need you to weigh
in.
I'm
ready to be
as a parent.
Do I need where's my robe?
Honestly, a robe would help.
Get you a comical the way that this, clown
that this goes.
This.
Yeah. Hold on.
A princess.
Okay, Patrick's
tiara.
Going to get a. Okay, good. This is perfect. Oh, a cowboy hat. That's good. That's,
yeah. Oh, perfect. Yeah, very, oh, this is the American equivalent of a crown. This works out perfectly. Yeah.
Crusader
taking
King
us back
Patrick
to PUBG, baby.
That's a high miss
on
PUBG.
Top of your like white person curly hair and then your headphones and then this cowboy hat.
So, Patrick, you left last time. Before I told my story. So I'm just going to give you the very quick Cliff Notes story, the two-sentence version of it.
Austin.
Previously on my Crusader Kings 3 game that was set in the Alsace region of France, where France meets Germany, because that's where my mom's family was historically from, or part of my mom's family is historically from. I had a really nice king who had a son who was a piece of shit. But the son, like
Game of Thrones, like.
Very ambitious, not Game of Thrones evil, but like a piece of shit in the sense that like was willing to call in political favors, was willing to like not.
It's not like animal cruelty evil, but just like, not a good guy.
Which is which is important for the story I'm about to tell. That distinction is important. So that king, or not a king, he was a count. My original dude just a count. His son, so it goes, the way that this goes is like there's a count, and above a count rules a county, a duke rules a duchy, which is like three or more counties.
Damn,
together.
That makes more sense than I would have, I thought you could just make, yeah. Sure, yeah, great.
Right? County. And then a king owns a bunch of duchies. That's the way it works. A count is a count. Yeah. That just boom, boom, boom. It goes up like that. A king rules a kingdom. Duchies. They're called duchies. That's what they're called.
I'm not. Okay. Duckies?
Yep. We can call them duckies. That's a joke that Jack the Keat and their partner KB made over on their stream. Anyway, the last time I told the story of this nice count's son who became a duke by calling in every bad favor, every favor in the most ambitious and shitty way. And also the part that you missed is that he was like, he lived through the bubonic plague and smallpox and cancer to achieve his dream of unifying all of these counties into one duchy. Because it's important, and this is very important for you to know,
that— Did he get all of those things?
Yeah, he got what he wanted and then died in, like, the last days of his life as everyone hated him. He spent a ton of, like, prestige, which is, like, you're cashing in your reputation, basically. Yeah, it's basically, like, he went into the negatives because he declared war on someone he'd just beaten in a war. It's like, dude, we had a truce. I'm like, no, we don't have a truce. What I have is your capital. That's what we got. We got a nice room for you in my dungeon, my guy. And so he was like a piece of shit, but he ascended to the throne, built this duchy. And that's important because with the succession laws where I'm at, the way it works is your heir gets the biggest thing you have, right? So if you have four counties, maybe they get the best county, but other people are going to get those other three counties. So that's why it's important to become a duke, because if you're a duke, your son gets the duchy, which is all of those counties as a unit, basically. So you kind of like are like building, it's almost like a match three game, but to build the match three, what you have to do is kill a bunch of people.
I feel like the new Adam Sandler movie on Netflix, The Duchy.
The Duchy. He's going to get, So.
It's just him like, what? Yeah.
This shitty duke, so my shitty count who becomes a duke has a son who the first event that I got with this son was when I took him over, and I said this last time, I got a message that said he had had a plan to kill his father. And when his dad died of cancer, he was like, damn, I guess I didn't get to pull the trigger. Basically, he's like, okay, so I'm playing as a piece of shit again. This guy's son is already just a nightmare person. And this son's name is, I have to remember the son's name so that I can make any sense of the story. Everett is Richard. His name is Richard, which was the name of the nice count originally too. So he named him after his father, which I guess that's nice. Richard is also ambitious, but is not as cruel as his father who built this duchy. He's playing a different game. He's doing the political thing. He marries a wife who has a bunch of political claims in a nearby region. The two of them kind of conquer in on a place, which we talked about last time a little bit. There's just like a nice – he does a better job of being – ambitious without burning bridges, but what he does do is he makes the historically bad decision, which is ignore everything in pursuit of your goal, right? Ignore the kind of things that worry you. So for instance, a crusade happened and he told the Pope to fuck off, because he was busy trying to build a kingdom. And if you agree to go to a crusade, when you're in the crusade, all of your local wars have to stop because you're supposed to be sending people down into Jerusalem to try to retake Jerusalem for the Catholics or what the fuck ever. So he's like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm busy trying to capture Geneva. I don't give a fuck about Jerusalem. In fact, it would be great if these motherfuckers from Geneva left to go fight in Jerusalem so I could roll in and take Geneva. And so he does that. And eventually he becomes a king. Like, and it's a big deal to be a king because then you got a bunch of dukes talking up to you and you're like, all right, I'm a European player now. Like, I don't report to anybody. He fought a war of independence against a different king. He did like a bunch of stuff that was like important. And all through the game, all through his arc, I'm getting this, there's this recurring event every few years where someone winds up dead, which I think is probably a bad thing. And so it's like, as the sun rises, I'm greeted by the news that Ansel, a nobleman, was murdered during the night, brutally gutted and laid out to be seen by whoever walked past. The body is quickly removed, and by the time the sun sets, no trace of the grisly act can be found. You have like three options or four options there, and those are like, mm-hmm. hey, I'm going to pray for the victim, or I'm going to make sure thoughts that everyone's accounted to, and I'm going to like, yeah, thoughts and prayers is the first one, 100%. You gain piety, but nothing gets done. Piety is another resource you can spend. Make sure everyone's accounted for at all times, which is like, I'm going to up the security here. And I'm going to like make sure all of my vassals are always being watched. Yeah. And they hate that. They hate those increased security measures. You feel like a tyrant. But is that safer? Who could say? Or you could double the guards, which again is no one really likes it. And it's expensive to double the guards. You have to pay a bunch of extra guards. And I think there's one that's like, I'm going to investigate this myself. I can only trust myself. And so you go down that road, and every 3 years, someone would die. And bit by bit, I'm like, I don't care. Shut the fuck up. People die every day. It's the Middle Ages. This place sucks. What's one more nobleman? I don't care. And in fact, sometimes it's useful because as a king who built his kingdom sort of like the way his father did and off of his father's work, a lot of the people who I'm the king of, they don't like me very much. So they have like factions to like overthrow me sometimes. And sometimes you have to like bring them onto your council or bribe them to make them like you a little bit more. But I'm doing an okay job at that. And then I get a message that says, this is like soon after I felt like I'd gotten everything right. I'd even eventually joined that crusade enough to get a little bit of land for my niece in the Middle East. Like, we won that crusade, and so she got to have like a vacation county, home. Like a vacation home near Jerusalem. The crusades were fucked up. A letter is waiting for me as I return to my chambers, written in red ink. No, in blood. For the sake of the kingdom, you will stop this search. I have lived my whole life right under your nose, and still you are so blind. To uncover my identity would only bring you pain. This handwriting, it looks almost like that of my son and heir, Everett. Could it be? Or, I think these murders will remain unsolved. So, So I go, let me see. Could it be? Let me confront the murderer. And so I get this message, and this is where I want everyone to tell me what they would do here. This is.
So you haven't made this choice yet? Or
I made this choice. We'll talk about my choice, right. But I just need to. So, murders at court, dark legacy. When I finally track down my son and heir, when I finally track him down, he does not even try to run. Hello, Richard, he says, looking me up and down. It's about time you found me. I take it you enjoyed my gifts? The smile that spreads over his face sends a shiver down my spine. So here are my options, and I'll explain what these mean, because if you mouse over them, they give you some detail about like what it does. You will be punished for your crimes, at which point you will imprison him and out his crimes. Everyone will know that your heir has been secretly murdering people, maybe on your behalf, because he does call them gifts, like an animal who has brought you a dead mouse. Yes. And again, he was sometimes killing political opponents of mine to shut them up forever. You'll be punished for your crimes. He's out as a criminal. He's still your heir, but he goes to prison until presumably he rises into power when you die, because the line of succession hasn't broken. An eye for an eye, a life for a life. You kill him in right there and then. That's illegal. He was not rightfully executed. You took it upon yourself to murder him, so you are a kinslayer, and everyone doesn't like you because of that. Go free, Everard, at which point no one knows, and it's a secret. But if anyone finds out in either of your lifetimes that you freed him, or that if you take over him as your next character, that he is a killer, then that's a huge amount of blackmail to put on him and on you. It must be boring committing these acts alone. You gain the sadistic trait and cover it up and join him as a killer. Or, oh, I'm so sorry, which is you let him go but kind of feel bad about it. So what do you do if your kid turns out to be the serial killer of the court who has killed mostly your political rivals? What do you do?
Well, you're also...
Do you have any other kids?
I have one other kid who has not been well educated, is not super good at being a politician. I probably should have just put him in the monastery, if I'm being 100% honest.
And this, I think this reveals a little bit of a political acumen. Granted, murder, but I mean,
we're already doing the Crusades.
Right,
the
that's Crusades what I mean. I'm just murder. Saying, we can't judge it by our 2020 morals. We're talking about effectiveness.
And also, wait, I should, you know what, I'm going to give you a better, I should actually say what the situation is with the two different sons. This son is a brilliant, this evil murder son is a brilliant like spy master type, obviously, like his intrigue is through the fucking roof. And there's an important distinction here, which is he is married to a princess. And when I tell you, when I show you the map of what she's a princess of, which means that she has, I believe, pressed claims or unpressed claims, the claims that don't go away after like a generation. So here in this map I've sent you of Europe, yes. I'm Burgundy. Do you see like the color Burgundy?
All right.
I was originally part of Lotharingia, which is this kind of northern kingdom where part of like Belgium is today. And the princess who this murder son is married to has claims on Aquitaine. Do you see
that? Big. That's
and
big.
West and East Francia, which on the screen it just says West Francia, but all of that. For people who are not at home, that's Europe. It's like it's Spain, it's France, it's Germany. Basically all of Europe. So he has been positioned to be there's no allegiance there. She just has claims to it because she is like a granddaughter of Charlemagne or some bullshit. You know what I mean? She has she's in the bloodline that will eventually become one of the great bloodlines of Europe. So he has a lot going on. The other son, I just looked up his stats because I have a screenshot, and he is like not super smart he's not like a good warrior. He's like kind of okay with money. He's not a good spy master. He doesn't understand religion very much, but like his great-grandfather, I guess his grandfather, everyone likes him. Everyone likes him. He has an 18 in the diplomacy skill. So he is like a well-liked dude. And his like three traits, I want to say, are like just, generous, and good. I don't remember what the third one is, but it's another one. So it's like literally, but he's married to like a nobody. He doesn't have claims on anything. She doesn't have claims on anything. I think I made this marriage to, actually she's like from Poland or something, which is just far enough away that it doesn't really matter. I can't call in those allies to help me very regularly because they have to march through all of Germany to get to me. So like those are my two
Swede
kids.
If she was a Swede or from Wessex, that might be viable.
Right, but it was unfortunately not the case. She's not. Where she's from is not on the map I just sent you. So those are my choices. I don't think this is a choice.
I don't think
you got to go with the fucking murder son. You have to.
Yeah, you partner up.
Incredibly
keep him close.
So I save scummed. So I could tell you the answers to all of it. So Kato, I need to know what you mean.
Kato, are you scumming piece of shit?
Yeah, I'm a save scumming piece of shit. Kato, you have to tell me what you would do.
Fuck. So here's the thing. Go free is just like nothing. Like
nothing. It's just nothing. No one knows about this except for
no
us.
No one knows except for
long term, he will become your heir and he will have a blackmail secret that if anyone finds out, then it's trouble.
And then it must be boring. Does that mean that you can then direct him? Are you like,
I don't think you direct him. I didn't save scum and choose that one. That's the one I wish I had saved. I could still do it. I have the save from this moment. I could go back and become a co-murderer.
Because that, my guess that could is it would be open useful to be
I guess,
well,
yeah.
I'm pointing
maybe I should
you
go back
way.
And try that one. Maybe that one would go better than any of the other games I've tried. Because everything goes bad. Every choice you make here for me went bad, which is why I'm a save scumming piece of shit. The first thing I tried to do, the first thing I did was I said, oh, I'm so sorry. And it didn't say that this would stress me out, but I did immediately die grief stricken with my stress meter maxed out. You can see I'm already on the left for people who played Crusader Kings. I'm already at 2.5 levels of stress. And I suspect that even though it didn't say it increased stress, it counts as like a stressful event or something. And I just died. My guy said, I'm sorry, like as if he'd failed his son and out of sadness just dropped dead on the spot. And I immediately started playing as the murderer's son. I also tried to set him free once.
Is that really what happened?
What do you mean?
Are you sure he wasn't killed and that's just the story that
I guess
out?
I think they would have told me if I'd gotten killed. I think it would have said, you've been fucking killed, you idiot. why would you let this guy go? The message from that one was King Richard of Burgundy rests in the arms of the Lord at 67 years of age. He died of old age, a charming man. He became famous for his elaborate feasts and grandiose balls. King Everard ascends to the throne, a corrupt and unjust man. Many do not expect his vassals to sit idly by if the realm starts crumbling under his watch. And it turns out that's what happens no matter fucking what. Because the real sin of the father was not having a son who was a murderer. It was building too fast. It was reaching too far too quickly. Because whether I freed him or put him in prison, whether I hid his crime, which would almost inevitably be found by someone else eventually anyway, or if I even sided with the good son, if I killed him in his place, which is what I ended up deciding to do, was killing him right there and then letting my other son take over, no matter what I tried, within 10 years of the new son taking the throne, the kingdom would fall into civil war, West Francia would march in and take some of it from us, Aquitaine would march in and take some of it from us, knowing that we had some claim still on their shit, maybe. And I would go back down to being a duke or being, there's another thing for the place I was in France. What is it called? Marquee. God, I forget. Huh?
Marquee or some shit.
It was not a marquee, but it's one of those. It's one of those things that's like I was a dauphine. I was the dauphine of some place. It's so appropriate that the takeaway from all of this is history doesn't care that you were a murderer. It cares that your kingdom got too big too quick. You couldn't keep people happy and secure, and so they're going to chop up your fucking kingdom, idiot. But I'm kind of happy to be back at that lower duke level because there's less to manage. I don't have to be as self-directed. It's just more chill down here. I'm happy to be an important duke who gets to be on a council versus being a king, because the only thing above a king is an emperor, and that's a real rough one to start going towards. Crusader Kings 3 continues to fucking whip, is my long and short.
I just became emperor of literally the same area.
Oh, okay.
I'm the emperor of West Francia right now.
Incredible.
And, inclusive of the kingdom of West Francia. Yeah, it does suck. I actually was able to control most of the Byzantium Empire because my mom was the queen of the Byzantium Empire and my child was the heir. And she died, and suddenly I was in like six wars, and almost all the territory got taken away from me, except for Constantinople, which I have taken care of for generation after generation because I had a son. Okay. I've been playing in like alternate like religions. I've been trying to do non-Christian religions, just to see what it is like to not be a Christian.
Sure.
In these games. So I haven't done much with Islam, but I've tried or with any of the Eastern pagan religions like Tengri, there's a lot of the pagan religions are like way harder to play as than the reformed, the organized religions, specifically
right.
because you need a certain amount of piety to reform the religion. And piety is a stat that is a currency that resets after you have a new child. Huh. So you can't like accrue piety over your father's lifetime. No, it's only about how pious you
specifically
are.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
So
right.
you have to like be gearing up to be like, this kid is going to be the one that we have reached a level of stability where this kid can devote themselves to religious studies and reform right. their pagan, you know, the pagan religion, and that shit's just fucking rough.
Which is still, if you reform one of those religions, it just kind of becomes an organized religion, right? It's not that you reform yeah. it to not believing in the gods or something, right? There's like...
Yeah, you can change the tenets of it when you reform, okay. and in fact, in order to reform, you have to change at least one.
Okay.
But... that doesn't mean you're changing the central tenets. You could just be taking it from male preference to equal gender preference in turn when it's like what they consider for like gender rights, essentially.
Gotcha.
Which is part of what I – so I was a Catholic and I had managed to make all of my territory Catholic. But I wasn't paying attention once I got Constantinople to what was happening to my son and heir. Because I was in so many fucking wars. Like, constantly, people were just in wars with me. Like, two or three wars would start up at once, and I'd be split, and I just surrendered a bunch of territory because I was like, it's better off that you have this because I literally cannot be the person that takes care of this. Uh-huh. I can't be the shepherd of this place anymore, except for Constantinople. But while my son and I was in Constantinople and not in the Catholic France that I had created, he converted to Polycanism. And then everybody started gunning for my ass.
What is Polycanism?
Polycanism is just a very literalist reading of the Bible that also allows your priests to be knights because they believe in sort of that, right? That's one of the tenets that allows your priests to be knights, which is pretty useful, honestly.
Yeah.
Because if you didn't like your priest, you could just make them a knight and right. go to war.
And then send them to
war. They probably die.
Yeah, and they die. Yeah. I definitely do that strategy all the fucking time.
My favorite if I have an heir I don't like is make him a knight. And
just
then
imagine
to war.
If you could send Ted Cruz to a war. And be like, you know what? Yeah, you love this country yeah. so much. Let's see. Let's fucking see.
Have fun in Iraq and Afghanistan, which asshole. We still are because of you, partially. Yeah. So enjoy it. I'm sure all those buddies all over there that you've sent to your deaths will really love having you. So, yeah, I ended up being so pissed because, like, he also just wasn't very devout, so he never earned enough piety to convert. So I just had to go the opposite strat because I was getting all of my vassals. They didn't want to be ruled by someone who didn't have the same religion as
them. So you were like, I'm just going to convert everyone here to this other religion. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. I'm going to spread Polycanism. Because the useful thing about Polycanism is they also do not feel that other religions are evil. They feel that all expressions of faith are righteous.
Okay.
So if you have so they didn't get a penalty for being around a bunch of Catholics, but a bunch of Catholics are just really fucking pissed that I was around and their ruler. But
that's very funny.
That ended up being very helpful because there's certain things of Polycanism I didn't like, especially I had a couple of cases where I just couldn't have a son or the son I had was shitty. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to change, you know, the tenets of the religion so that they were more tolerant towards female heirs and female rulers. Because I had a couple instances in which, you know, the first 30 years of your rule was just concentrated on getting your vassals to not resent the fact that they're being ruled by a woman.
Right.
So I created a new religion off the basis off the tenets of Polycanism that also did not have a severe penalty for same-sex people, same-sex relationships, because I had also had some experiences where like my son just got a huge penalty to how much his he was a perfect leader. He had incredible diplomacy stats. In fact, a lot of people just offered to be vassalized by me when he was a ruler, but he was gay. So if that, I had also like a bunch of people on my council that had blackmailed me because right. they found out that I had a lover, and all these people on my council fucking sucked. So I was like, okay, let's not make this as such a thing that I can get all of my plans just fucked up because someone happens to be gay and have a lover. Let's at least make it like so they mm-hmm. shun these relationships and they're not considered like a mortal sin. So I changed those two things. I had a ruler that had enough piety to do that. I did the thing where I was like, I'm going to get my empire to a place where it basically runs itself. And then I'm going to just decide that this particular heir is going to, from the time that they are young, be raised by my patriarch and just accrue as much piety as possible. And his name was Lothair. And I founded Lotharianism. And it's great because the Paulicans don't mind it. I had a bunch of people convert to Lollardy for some reason when I tried this. But it is the only way I've been able to keep these areas that I still have under control. I can't vassalize anyone around me, though, anymore because they're all Catholic and they all hate me.
Just live in your little kingdom. Keep people happy. Don't show any ambition and hope that no one ambitious shows up near you. That's all. No big deal.
Or I could just wage a lot of wars and then forcefully convert everyone.
Right. Right. And hope the Pope never decides or is convinced to crusade you.
The Pope has been crusading a ton, but but Paulicanism, for some reason, is not the one that they hate. They hate Islam so much more.
For me, the
Paulicanism is like a thorn in the side, but Islam is the one that got it destroyed.
The crusade that just kicked off on the save that I just talked about is for England, because the Swedes have completely taken over England. And in my
game, they're Astaru?
The Swedes are Astaru, which is – we don't
they
have
do
time.
Human sacrifice.
We don't get – it's weird that Astaru is in this game is what I will say, because my understanding – and you can write to the email if I'm wrong about this, but that Astaru specifically – has been in the last few years, especially the kind of that word is not necessarily as historic as you might think it is, though the way it's described or the way that it's used, and is filled with racists now. It's like there are absolutely present day non-racist pagan beliefs that descend from similar religious backgrounds as Astaru does. Or sorry, it's not Astaru. It's Asatru, right?
Asatru,
right? I always say it backwards.
Also do.
But you know, there are other similar kind of Germanic pagan belief systems that are like neo-paganism that I think is like, let's awesome, cool, like go for it. But specifically, Asatru, I don't know the pronunciation, apologies, has been like colonized by the racists, by white supremacists. Yeah. So it's weird that it's just presented as like, yes, this is what it was originally.
To like Wikipedia, it's an ancient religion, but it was officially recreated in the 1970s in Iceland.
Okay.
You know, this expression of Asatru is perhaps more modern than historical.
It's one of those things where it's
kind of weird.
My understanding is there are other words that we could have talked about. There are other ways to call that specific set of beliefs than this one that has been used by the far right. Anyway. This is the stuff we get into when you play a Crusader Kings. When you're already playing as medieval racists, you end up needing to be like, where and how do we draw these lines? In any case, I'm still really enjoying this game. It just completely makes time disappear for me. So shout outs CK3 continuing to be really fucking good. What else? What else have people been up to? Patrick, you just did Spelunky. Anything else going on?
Can't talk about the other one till Thursday. Next podcast, we can talk about the other game I'm playing.
Okay.
There's another big release coming out this week, so use your brain powers. Figure it out.
Can't do it. Never. Could never be me.
I've never used my brain.
My brain.
I don't trust you. I trust the listener.
I see. Wow. Okay, that makes sense then. I can get behind.
Anyone on
smart
this call,
not to
though.
Trust me.
Yeah.
Kato, did you end up getting a win in Star Renegades?
No.
It's good. You should. I think that I can answer a lot of the questions we had about the end of that game from last week. I won't do it because it'll be spoilery, but I will say that there was a really interesting mechanic for how your runs change between runs.
Between completed ones.
Yeah. There's something that happens that I think is like, that's clever.
Nice.
In terms of forcing you to switch up your play style and stuff like that. Also, I would say I read about, and I haven't unlocked any yet, but I read about how you unlock the other tier of of character class, and it's really cool, and I need to just, like, spend some time doing it. So that's where I'm at with Star Renegades. Also, just, like, that game challenged me in a way I didn't expect in terms of understanding the combat, like, the combat design. And it really forced me to, like, really think through stuff about how, like, the timeline works that I was not doing in order to beat the final, like, the third boss and then the big final confrontation stuff.
Yeah.
So shout out to that. But you have been playing Tony Hawk, right?
Yes. Yeah. I picked up the remaster finally just because I had some time. Because I really love those original games. I played them on N64. Many hours.
Wait, did the N64 version have the music?
Yeah, it did.
Okay. Was it just, like, really compressed?
Yeah, it was also shortened versions. It was
like a full song. Short versions of punk songs.
Extremely funny. Well,
I mean, it kind of works. They just cut out, like, one of the, like, verses, basically.
Oh,
out of every
I know.
Song.
It's just, that's know? Just, yeah. These are songs that, like, by themselves are, like, often, seconds. Like, a minute and a half.
Yeah. Right. So they're like a minute at most. But yeah. It is funny playing it now and being like, oh, there's another verse in this song? I never knew that because I only remember it from playing Tony Hawk's on N64. Yeah, it's a wonderful remake if you ever enjoyed any of those, either of those two games, or even if you enjoyed later games, because they added in they've kind of added in all the mechanics they had up to, like, essentially Tony Hawk's Pro Skater Underground, or is that what
Thug?
It is? Thug. Tony Hawk's Underground.
Yeah,
Tony Hawk's Underground. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the smart thing they did was they allowed for, if you just really want the base, like, experience to be exactly the same, you can change the move sets between what you had in Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1, Pro Skater 2, and then, like, all the added modern stuff.
So the stuff that you're talking about here is stuff like manuals to link tricks, reverts to
that's also for linking. Basically, you linking have also, to revert off of when you're on a vert surface or, like, in a half pipe,
right.
You have to revert before you can manual in order for that combo to continue.
Gotcha, right.
So it's like revert, manual, then you go up the other side as you're manualing if you have enough speed to, like, continue. The one thing that isn't there from the modern games is, like, getting off your board and walking around. Everything else, basically, like, wall jumps, basically, like, you can jump into a wall and continue a combo, even though normally you would just crash into it if you were playing the original games.
I think I stopped playing at the point that they added that. I played up through 3, right? Like, I played, like,
3
like
was
the big, it's wild when you, I'm sure, if you're playing this for the first time, the ability to link combos is like, yeah, of course, that, like, makes sense. It's like when they added the first ability to link a combo and it's keep manual. That going.
You're like, oh my God.
Like, it completely changed how you play the game. It made it for the better. I mean, it's a different game as a result.
You guys
have
all seen that custom level that someone made that's a roller coaster. Right?
Yeah, the roller coaster level.
You just
is
manual
funny.
Up a bunch of rails that go unreasonably high and then manual down them.
So I'm curious, like, how do those levels feel with all that stuff added?
Good. Like, it feels great because now you can just link, if you're good at the game, like, you can link
like
combos
I
around
am,
the whole spaces.
Kato.
Well, I mean, not really. I'm not actually that good. I've just watched people who are good do it. Also, there's already, of course, because there was a speedrunning community for the original games, there's already a speedrunning community for the remasters.
Incredible.
And there's already an... I tweeted out, excited for the inevitable AGDQ run of the Tony Hawk Pro Skater remasters. And then somebody links me an AGDQ run of the Tony Hawk remasters. It's
From
already
when?
Out there. What?
I said, from when?
Yeah, though it was like an in-between, you know, AGDQ does a bunch of like in-between charity, like smaller ones. It was for one of those, and it was like right at the launch of the remasters.
Kato, you should start running Tony Hawk.
Oh my
that's
God.
My, that's my thought.
I wish I could be good enough to do that.
You could be. You just got to put the time in.
I also learned that my claw grip that I play these games with is bad for the PlayStation controller. Because I have my, like, pointer finger, like, my middle finger up on triangle so that I can, like, instantly grind off of any other trick that I'm doing without having to move a finger off the flip or grab buttons.
Uh-huh.
But that middle finger is constantly accidentally tapping the fucking touch bar on the DualShock 4, which opens the social menu, which I don't fucking know what that is or why it's so easily accessible, but
skaters,
it's killed
are social.
So many.
You just gotta be social. Have you considered making yourself more social, being a more social skater, Kato?
No, I hate that. I hate people. Let me skate.
Is there a multiplayer mode in this?
Yes, absolutely.
Is there like a free skate, like hangout, skate around?
Yeah, there's a couple different modes, but I haven't done too many of them. One of them is just like a free skate, like you have 2 minutes, get the highest score in the lobby, which is great to see, like, people who understand this game in the millions and people who are like, yeah, I've played one of these before, like, yeah, much lower, because the way that all the linking stuff works, you can like really, really just combos get forever. You can combo like a minute straight if you're really good at this game, which is wild. Yeah. But yeah, they like just the general ways that they've remade these spaces, and also the kind of little tweaks that they've changed. Like one of the things they did was change the animation for standing up, which is great. You can speed it up by hitting X, but it also isn't, you don't have to watch Tony Hawk stand up, like get up off the floor. It just does this little like digital effect with like a little rewind, like, and like he like, yeah, teleports to standing. You know, it's one of those like little like quality of life improvements.
Yeah.
That are really smart for like keeping you going. Like, it used to be such a penalty to fucking bail in that game. You were like watching this animation for a solid like 3 seconds. So like that's nice. You can change the playlist, which is great. You can
turn off like the two songs on the playlist you hate.
Right, or just leave one.
No, I don't think you should be allowed to do that. That's not quality of life. Quality of life is living with the punk soundtrack. And no. Yeah, you'd rather hear the Blink song, but you know, you've got to live with whatever else is there.
Just gonna, my playlist is currently just...
You gotta do it.
Yes, part one, Power Man. Oh my that, God. Look, that song's actually pretty good. I'm gonna defend that Power Man 5000 song. Maybe because it's been burrowed into my brain from a certain era. That's part of it. That's the aesthetic. Come on.
My current you have to be completely transported back to fucking the early 2000s. You really gotta do it.
Yeah.
You gotta feel like you're in the side of the Hot Topic in the mall, furtively trying to put a pair of Invader Zim earrings in your pocket.
Democrats looking fondly back on George Bush is like erasing these punk songs from the original lineup. You just gotta live with the truth.
Right. Kato, tell me about your soundtrack.
Oh, it's just Superman by Goldfinger. That's it.
All right, you know what? I take it all back. That is an acceptable turn. If that's what you're doing with it, then I'm actually on board with it.
Oh my God, you've made it like even the demo has more songs than that. Yeah. You're like, no, I just need this one.
Just this one. That's it. All I need. This is Tony Hawk to me.
Love it.
They should have lobbied the same way. If people aren't aware, I haven't played it, but like just reading about it, the remaster is just like so many smart choices were made over how they chose to handle this. And specifically one of the ones that I really respected and showed folks that were just like really thinking through what it means to like handle a game like this in 2020 was like the original lineup of skaters, like having them come in and like rescan them and their old versions of themselves.
Yeah.
They should have had the bands come in and re-record those fucking songs.
That would have been incredible. Please.
That would have been great.
That would be
One thing they did do also was they added new people to the lineup, which is great. Like, cool. There's like a newer, younger generation, including the first non-binary skater in any one of these games, which is great.
Awesome.
Leo Baker.
That's rad.
Shout outs.
And they also, Tony Hawk went back and, like, made, you know, there was that one trick
that,
was, like, ableist, and they went back and, like, renamed it, you know, based on the, like, there's a lot of, like that's what makes this remaster like really smart and like cool, is it's not just, yo, we made the graphics better, and it's like there was like real thought.
There's
it's
a
like,
holistic approach.
Yeah. Like what does it mean to bring back this in 2020? And it's like to address like the name of a trick. Like would anyone have faulted them if they hadn't done it? It would have been like on Twitter, like, hey, this is shitty in 2020.
Right. Do better.
And the world moves on. Yeah. Do better. So to change that is just, I mean, maybe that's partially like Tony Hawk himself being, he seems to always be like actually profoundly involved in all of these. And he's on my like list of like, man, it'd be, he's such a great Twitter follow and he seems really funny and like still a good person. Like can the floor fall out from under Tony Hawk and it turns out he's bad? I guess that's anyone.
This seems unlikely at this point, but
I'm hoping. Don't say that, Kato. Come on, don't say it seems unlikely. Have you experienced this year?
Yeah. God, 2020 has taken so much from us.
Don't take Tony Hawk from me, please.
Don't take Tony Hawk from me.
I'm begging you. All right. Well, I'm glad Tony Hawk is good. I'm like, yeah, there's something about just having a Tony Hawk available within reach that feels like a little comfort. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like having a nice part of your apartment you can go to take a nap. Tony Hawk is like that for me, where it's just like, yeah, Tony Hawk. Let me just do some grinds and
That era of games, I was I did really like the Tony Hawk games. Me and my friends were really into the snowboarding games at the time, pre-SSX, which was Cool Borders 1 and 2 on PlayStation 1, both excellent games. And they got very into 1080 on N64.
I forgot about 1080.
Had just such a weird control scheme because of the analog stick, but once you became accustomed to it, we spent so much time in Cool Borders 1. I forget what you had to do, but if you like did a certain, you know, number of things, you could unlock like an alien to play in at the end. It was like such an accomplishment.
That's a good question. Wait, are there any like stunts casted special like secret characters in this Tony Hawk? Is Spider-Man here? Is Darth Maul here?
I don't know. Not that I know of. At least not immediately, right? Like I'm sure there could be some, you know,
I'm checking.
There's always hidden shit in here.
Yeah, but like that was always the funniest thing too in those games was that there would be just some ridiculous pop culture, you know, secret.
Well,
the alien isn't it? There is an alien. You can be Officer Dick or the Roswell alien. So.
Oh, right. They got Jack Black for that this time.
For the alien?
Officer Dick.
That's sure. But also, Activision has historically, they don't just release these remasters. Like, they straight up support them, like the games of a service style, often with free DLC. Like, the Crash Team Racing, like, update they did, like, had free shit for, like, a better part of a year. So, like, I won't be – like, one of the more remarkable things of the last, like, 3 or 4 years or so is that Activision quietly became, like – the smartest company when it comes, like they turned a Crash into like a, not a phenomenon, but like that, those games make a shitload of money, revitalized a franchise, and they did Spyro really well. It's just, we would not have been on my bingo card that Activision will become the gold standard of how to treat old games by which you will measure like all other re-releases and compilations.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, we should go because we have to have a meeting about this week's Save Point stream, which is kicking off on Wednesday, running through Sunday.
Really should have put that at the maybe you should record a thing to put at the top for anyone that doesn't make it to the end of the podcast.
We announced it last week also. Earlier. We did announce it last week, but you're right. We did it at the end there also. So.
Which is a waypoint thing. We always, that big thing that we're doing.
The big thing that we're doing.
Buried at the end of a 2-hour podcast. Right.
Exactly. For people who did turn off last time, but want to know this time, we are kicking it off on Wednesday, and we're raising money for the national bailout. It is starting at, do we have a kickoff time? Am I missing that from this? Here we go.
Noon
sounds right. That sounds like a real time.
Noon ET.
Noon Eastern time.
I know early on, hopefully if Rob's PC issues are fixed, I will be playing some Crusader Kings, hopefully with him.
Yes. I'm going to crash that, by the way. I'm not going to let you do that without me being there at this point.
That's all I want.
Yeah. So 12 Eastern on Wednesday, September 16th through the evening of Sunday, September 20th. There's going to be community streams all throughout, staff streams mixed in. We're trying to like really get the community involved this time. And again, there will be a Tiltify link like last year that can help you go, put all your money to this great cause. We're going to have someone on from the national bailout to talk through those issues, and to just kind of hang out a little bit. And it's going to be good. It's going to be, you've seen these streams before. We're sadly not all in the same place because of COVID, but.
Quickly, I wanted to shout out the mod Glorgu who bought savepoint.stream, which will point to wherever you need to go. So
love it.
Savepoint.stream.
Love that. Yeah, savepoint.stream. That's a really good, easy, quick way to get there. I love it so much. Look forward to that. I'm very excited to kick it off and We're excited to have you tune in, and hopefully we can provide a little bit of entertainment. We'll be doing the Thursday podcast live just during that. So so look forward to that.
Pants for that.
Great. So look forward to that.
I don't know. Your camera seems like your camera plays. You just have to be. Just don't get up.
Short enough that if I stand up, you can only see like the end of my t-shirt. Right, so it kind of works out, but I fear people seeing my butt.
Fair.
That's a fear.
I fear that for me, just seeing my own in the morning. I get out of the shower.
I don't need it.
I don't need this right now. I don't need this energy. We have to do a stream. All right. So look forward to that. As always, you can send your questions to gaming@device.com. You can continue to send us bad boss emails. I promise I'll read at least some bad boss emails and food rivalry emails on this stream. So again, really look forward to that, because I'm sitting on some good ones. I'll tell you the truth.
Bad boss emails.
Yeah.
Honestly, if you need an extra dose of bad boss emails, the Street Fight live call-in shows.
My God.
They get some premium bad boss content and also some excellent tips on how to screw over your bad boss. So
yeah,
I would check that out.
Check that out. Shout out to them. beyond that, as always, thank you to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You up the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. You can find me on Twitter at @Austin_Walker. Everything we do, Waypoint on Twitter. Patrick, how about you?
@PatrickLubbock.
Gita.
@XOXOGossipGita.
And Kato.
@A_Kato_appears.
There we go.
I should so this Belongi stream, I'm not doing
right, please.
I've recorded 6 or 7 Spelunky 2 episodes that will go up just I record them like 1 hour chunks. So like there are times where you're getting 2 episodes, like, why is Patrick wearing the same clothes? Because I'm just splitting them into hour chunks, because it's how I would do it in the morning anyway.
It's COVID time, baby. We're all wearing the same clothes.
Exactly. So you go to youtube.com/PatrickLubbock. The first one I set live this morning. So that's up, and they'll go up daily. So there might be some overlap if I do, like, if you're worried about the timeline. I'll probably stream some during Save Point. But they'll all be going up there. My hope is in the future to do some of them at night. It's not going to happen in the morning. It's going to have to be a nighttime thing when everyone's asleep. So, but generally, if you don't want to worry about stream times because they're not going to be consistent or on a schedule, you know, if you just go to youtube.com/PatrickLubbock, you'll find them there.
Rad. Look, I am looking forward to those. I like cannot fucking wait to dig into those videos, because again, they were such a important part of me experiencing the first Spelunky. All right. As always, you already know what it is. Fuck capitalism. Go home. See y'all on Wednesday.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Oh, we're switching calls.
We're switching to a different call?
We seem to be.
Well, I'm over here now.
Discord's a good and wonderful app. I don't know. Discord fucked up. I hit add and then this happened.
I cannot believe that we didn't talk about the Tony Hawk Pro Crusaders mod.
Today. Oh my God!
I had that ready to go and copy paste in here, and I completely forgot.
We don't have time.
It.
We don't have time. But y'all
whenever
one
of us plays it.
Yeah. Uh huh.
We need to make sure that we do this. I'm gonna take.
I gotta.
Genghis Khan spawns as a skate legend. Genghis will never attack a fellow skater. Possibly the most comprehensive skating mod for Crusader Kings 3. My friend Gary couldn't decide whether to play Tony Hawk or Crusader Kings 3, so I made this mod to help him out. A new leveled lifestyle trait, skater. Go skating at the skate park to level up. A new decision to start skating. A decision to hit the skate park for some stress loss. About 2 dozen new skating events. The top response here, someone asks, would it be possible to add skatrilineal succession so that the throne passes to the best skater in your dynasty? And the response is from the creator, I'll have to take it into serious consideration at least. I want to make sure we remain strictly historical, so it would be a massive oversight to omit skatrilineal. Also, Kato, I got all that in the backup, so I'll just send you that part of the backup.
Good, yes.
That should go as a post. That's a post pod to me.
Great, yeah.